This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov. Of course, we're into Sivan already. We're warming up for Shavuot. It's a big week in Israel as the dairy supplies get absolutely decimated everybody ahead of Shavuot. But Noah Kirel has managed to open up a new front with Israel's relations with Poland. And the way that she did that was by talking about her experiences at the Eurovision with a local Israeli news site. And she said that she really enjoyed her experiences in the Eurovision and the achievement that she had achieved. But then she went on to say, in addition to all of that, that she felt that she had her real victory was putting Israel on the map, leaving a mark and making my country proud. Also, to receive 12 points, which is the maximum number of points that you can achieve in the Eurovision, to receive 12 points from Poland after almost the entire Kirel family was murdered there in the Holocaust is a great achievement.
Well, I think she's got a fair point, but obviously Poland not loving it.
Yeah. So those were the words of Noah Kirel, and that immediately solicited a response from a Polish parliament member, Anna Maria Zukowska, who tweeted saying, "Does this statement reflect the level of Holocaust education in Israel? Do young people in Israel think that the Holocaust was caused by Poland, over which a young Israeli citizen can achieve a moral victory after many decades, or what?" Then she went on to continue to say, perhaps Noah has something to say about the points received from Germany, which was zero from the German jury and also from the German public. So tweet went out from that member of parliament, and then the Polish deputy foreign minister also followed up with a tweet saying, "The fact that many people in Israel consider Poland to be a co-perpetrator of German crimes rather than the victim is often not the result of bad will so much as it is a result of lack of knowledge and incomplete education. There are many reasons for this, but one of them was certainly the organized trips of Israeli youth to Poland, which unfortunately confirmed the image of our country's participation in the Holocaust for many years." And then he went on to talk about the process of the new format that has been introduced for Israeli school trips to Poland, which will mean that Israeli students will also visit a site recommended by the Polish government. So we're reopening this kind of very, very sore point where the Polish government
are determined. They're very sensitive about the Holocaust, aren't they? For a country that was fairly complicit in it.
Well, so that's exactly the issue. They are very determined to prove that they were simply bystanders, innocent bystanders, victims as much as everybody else. It just happened to be on their soil. None of the Polish people would have been involved, according to at least this version that's being put out by the Polish government. And I think that, to be fair, this is something that needs to be thought about very, very carefully, because if this is the revisionist theory that's being perpetrated in now, which is still within living memory of what happened during the Shoah, one can imagine what might happen in another 10, 20, 30, 40 years. from now, when we will have no longer any survivors who are actually there to witness it. So it's an interesting little front that's been opened up with Poland, and clearly a highly sensitive point. And of course, Noah Kirill jumping right in the middle of that. And I'm going to open it up to the viewers, because I'm sure that they will have their say on this particular matter.
Absolutely. I'd love your thoughts on 345-19 or 061-895-1019. Three Palestinians are reported to have been killed overnight by IDF forces in Nablus.
Yeah, so this was just a piece of news that's come in early this morning, which reported that these three Palestinians were killed. Apparently, Israeli security forces raided the Balata refugee camp, which is quite near to Nablus, also known as Shechem. It's the same place, just two different names for the same place. And the three people were named, three young people in their 20s and 30s. And apparently this arose as a result of IDF forces that had gone into the Balata refugee camp in order to confiscate illegal weaponry, to destroy explosive labs, and also to get rid of multiple heavy explosives, according to some of the reports that I've read. Of course, the Palestinian Authority has condemned the killing as a real massacre. So I don't know if the killing of three people can necessarily be classified as a massacre. But they also went on to say that, of course, this raid on the Balata refugee camp is simply a continuation of the comprehensive war on the Palestinian people. So obviously highly emotive language being used there. But just to be clear, that the fact that the Israeli forces went into the Gaza Strip and attacked Palestinian Islamic Jihad as they did, and destroyed so many weapons manufacturing facilities and storage facilities, and managed to somehow reduce the effectiveness of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, at least in the Gaza Strip, doesn't mean that the same activities are not happening within the Judean Samaria area, within the Palestinian Authority area. And that's, of course, a much, much more difficult area to police, and much more sensitive indeed. But the IDF forces have more direct access to go in there. And that has certainly been the case over the past few weeks and months, where we've seen a lot of IDF activity within the Palestinian Authority area in order to try to prevent this buildup of weaponry. These three individuals who've been killed, we haven't yet heard whether they are affiliated to any of the militant groups or not, but inevitably, so many of the people who've been killed, the massacres, the civilians that have been killed, all of a sudden, when it comes to the funeral, get dressed up into the militant gear, or are dressed up and with flags and things like that of various militant organizations. So in the most part, people who have been killed in these IDF raids have been militants. These three people we are not sure about yet, but certainly as the day progresses, we will learn a little bit more about who they are. When their martyrdom posters get put up, then the militant groups are very, very eager to claim responsibility, another martyr from our organization. So we will know in due course to what extent they might have been affiliated. But in the meantime, at least the Palestinian Authority is calling it a massacre and talking about these raids. The refugee camp is clearly a civilian area, and yet so much militant activity going on there that unfortunately the IDF has little choice but to go in from time to time in order to clean this up, in order to avoid as much as possible any attacks being perpetrated from there towards Israeli civilians.
A massacre. So what does that mean? If they're using this type of language and this type of rhetoric, can we expect any form of repercussions, or is this just the normal verbiage around the killing of terrorists and militants?
Well, it's certainly the normal verbiage that we see all the time. The extent to which we can expect to see some sort of repercussions and some sort of response is unclear. And what was quite interesting for me is that even though there was a huge buildup of expectation and lots and lots of rhetoric surrounding the Yom Yerushalayim celebrations that took place at the end of last week, ultimately Israelis were allowed to celebrate Yom Yerushalayim in relative peace and calm. In other words, even though there was a lot of rhetoric and many, many threats were issued, ultimately they were not carried out, and this has resulted in quite a lot of criticism being leveled towards Hamas and towards some of the other militant organizations who are being accused within the Palestinian within the street, the Palestinian street, of not doing enough in order to oppose what Israelis were celebrating on Yom Yerushalayim. And I think a lot of them feel quite let down that there wasn't some sort of a response to the Yom Yerushalayim celebrations. So whether this will solicit a response or not is unclear. But I think that the militant organizations in general are being a lot more cautious about when they choose to come out and issue official responses, send in militants or carry out attacks in response to some of these things. I think that they're being a lot more careful than has been the case in the past.
Very interesting. The government will be concentrating this week on passing a highly controversial state budget.
Yes.
So what is controversial about it?
Well, we do need a state budget, and the law says that our state budget will need to be passed by Sunday night. So a week from now, we will know whether the state budget has been passed or not according to the time that has been laid down. And just so that you know, if the state budget is not passed by Sunday night, then we will automatically go to another round of elections. So that the stakes are pretty high this week in order to get the national budget passed. And there is an expectation that the state budget will be passed because the ruling coalition has sufficient majority in order to make sure that the state budget is passed. The problem is, of course, that even within the ruling coalition, there are many, many disagreements about the state budget. And the main controversy which surrounds this year's state budget is the amount of money that is being allocated to so-called coalition agreements. So this is money that was essentially promised by the Prime Minister and the Likud at the time that the coalition agreements were signed, because each party entering into the coalition came with certain demands, political demands, financial demands, appointments to senior positions and things like that. And this is the moment when the financial demands are all put together and are enacted within the state budget in order to put them into law. And the amount of money that is being allocated to fulfilling demands that were encapsulated in coalition agreements comes to 13.5 billion shekels. 1,300 shekels for each man, woman, and child in Israel, just to fulfill coalition obligations. Now, what's controversial about that? Because that money, at the end of the day, is going to Israeli citizens of one sort or another. So the controversy is that if it has to be encapsulated in a coalition agreement, it means that it serves one particular interest group. Because if it served everybody across the board, one would imagine that the government would put it into the state budget without the need for it to be encapsulated in a specific coalition agreement. So what we're finding with this 13.5 billion shekels is that this is money that is being allocated for specific interest groups only, and therefore not uniformly across all citizens. And one of the major controversies within that is the amount of money that's being dedicated to the ultra-Orthodox education system. Now, of course, their education system is entitled to funding just the same as everybody else's. But the major controversy is, of course, the fact that the ultra-Orthodox education system, in the most part, doesn't include core subjects. English, maths, science, Hebrew, things of that sort of nature are generally excluded from the ultra-Orthodox education system in favor of learning Torah subjects and learning subjects along the lines that the ultra-Orthodox community have demanded. And the major objection that so many Israelis have to allocating so much money to that system without it including core subjects is that we are effectively educating almost an entire generation of people who will ultimately not be able to make any significant contribution to our country when they grow up, because they won't have the basic education skills and the basic knowledge of core subjects in order to make their contribution. And this is a very substantial a controversy that we find ourselves embroiled in at the moment. And it's really come to the fore when we see this number of 13.5 billion shekels, which is being allocated not only to the ultra-Orthodox education system, and certainly a lot of money going in that direction. So this has definitely been up there in the headlines with people really opposed to so much money being allocated to coalition agreements.
Wow, and you can hardly blame them. Finally, talks are underway to allow Muslims in Israel to catch direct flights to Mecca for the Hajj. This would be amazing for Israeli Muslims.
It certainly would be. And the way that the plan is, at least, is that they will fly not to Mecca, but to Jeddah instead, and from then move to Mecca for the Hajj, which is due to take place in June. There's a lot still to be agreed upon in this particular discussion. And the U.S. government is very much in the middle of coordinating these discussions, not only with the Saudis and the Israelis, but indeed also with the Jordanians. And the Jordanians are part of this discussion because, in the most part, Israeli Muslims, Palestinian Authority Muslims who travel to Mecca for the Hajj at the moment and in years that have gone by, recent years, have generally traveled to Amman in Jordan. And from there, they have caught Jordanian carriers to travel on to Jeddah and then to Mecca from there for the Hajj. So by allowing direct flights from Israel, the Jordanian carriers are potentially cut out of the deal in favor of other carriers who would fly directly to Israel. So interestingly, one of the proposals is that some of those Jordanian carriers will be involved in actually transporting people from Israel, not from Jordan, but from Israel, to Saudi Arabia and back again at the end of the Hajj, in order to allow the Jordanians at least to recoup some of the losses that they may earn as a result of creating this direct route. But of course, there's a massive political shift and agreement that would be required in order to get the Saudi Arabian government to agree to allow flights from Israel to land in Saudi Arabia. We already know that the Saudis have opened up their airspace to Israeli carriers, and so flights from Israel are currently allowed to fly through Saudi airspace when heading in that direction. I personally flew through Saudi airspace last week when I flew to the United Arab Emirates and back, and it was very fascinating to see how that worked and how much time it cuts off the route as a result of being given the right to fly over Saudi Arabia. So the U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan is very, very much in the middle of trying to coordinate from a U.S. point of view, because it seems as if this is one of the things that President Biden is determined to make work. There was an attempt last year to make it work. It didn't quite get that far, but certainly this year there is another push to try and get it to work. I'm not sure that it will be successful between now and June to have this all in place, but of course time will tell, and we will be watching very carefully and with great interest to see where this goes.
Very, very important, and what an amazing step that would be. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.